I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah.
And welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. And I am Wes Sykes. And to the other side of the ether is the fatso to my fatty Magoo. It's Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, husky kid for hire.
Hey, Magoo.
Fatty Magoo, have been going on a deep rewatch of the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia series, and that I was watching that episode pretty recently, the Aluminum Monster versus Fatty Magoo, so that's season three, I think, of It's Always Sunny, so on the top of mind here.
Gotcha, okay, that's why at some point, maybe that's what I'll do, that's how I'll start off my honeymoon on the plane. I'll just start watching
It's fun. I really funny. Suggest you. I think it's a great series. I tell you, season three really finds its stride. So that's
season three. Interesting. Mm-hmm, okay. Is 16 in?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Not as good as it used to be. You know, they get older. It's fine.
Lose their fastball. Okay.
Yeah. They kind of lose that edge, that hunger a little bit. You know.
Gotcha. They almost like rested on their laurels because of prior successes. What you're saying.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, we're going to be discussing a group of people who are never hungry, or always hungry, I should say, because in honor of my birthday, we were doing a birthday review of the 1995 Disney classic Heavyweights, starring Ben Stiller, Sean Weiss, and Kenan Thompson. Wait for it. Because I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Come on, be fat. You know I'm fat. Of course, Weird Al's cover of I'm Bad, I'm Fat.
Mm-hmm. Well, happy birthday, by the way, Wes. I know it's before the show, but I want everybody to know I said it out loud.
Yeah, I am on the wrong side of 35 here, so I'm closer to 40 than I am 30 right now at 36. So that's weird to say, but I still feel spry. I feel young. We'll get into all the birthday stuff and all that and the Heavyweights review, but before all that, Nick, did you ever go to a sleepaway or summer camp as a kid?
I did a summer camp, but not like a stay away, like stay over. And but then there was like a recruiting type, like showcase camp that was like a few days. It was a weekend. It was at Brown. So like stayed there, actually roomed with Bob Feller's grandson. That was wild. Like they done, he wasn't like a wild person by any stretch, but like, it was just, I read Bob Feller's book as a kid, so it was kind of weird to have that happen. But anyways, yeah.
Not for me, but for the people listening, who is Bob Fellers?
Bob Feller is one of the greatest baseball pitchers of all time. Pitched in Cleveland his entire career. And I mean, he was like one of the, he threw gas. He was probably in between Walter Johnson and Nolan Ryan. He was probably the hardest throwing pitcher.
Interesting. No, of course I knew that. I use that on my immaculate grid all the time.
Right. Of course.
Just like Vince Coleman, right? You know, that everybody knows Vince Coleman.
There are some absolutely absurd ones in this thing. It's fun. I think because everything I got going on right now, I'm a little fried. So because I've had some not great scores recently. But what about you, Wes? Have you ever gone to sleepaway camp?
Never sleepaway camp. I used to be a card-carrying member of the Sagamore Beach Colony Club. I went there for like six years, I think. You know, it's a day camp, summer camp sort of thing. So you would go there for a couple of hours. All the kids would ride their bikes in the neighborhood and get there. It was fun. You play, you know, kickball, foursquare, dodgeball, all that good stuff. Go to the swimming lessons in the Cape Cod Bay, try to avoid getting eaten by a shark. Maybe play some tennis lessons, and then you cap it all off with the end of the year show. And then everyone would go to friendlies afterwards. It was a great time.
Huh. There you go. Friendlies. Yeah. Hey, speaking of friendlies, I don't know if I've asked you this. Have you ever experienced a drive-through friendlies before?
I have not. Would that be for ice cream only?
I've only done it for ice cream, but there's one up here and I've never seen it until I moved up here.
No, all the friendlies outside of the one, I think, in Plymouth are closed that I know. The one that I grew up going to closed, and it's very depressing, actually.
Yeah, it's...
Many a monster cone was eaten in that establishment.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. It's a good choice. It's a good choice.
But
yeah.
But yeah, never any sleepaway camps though. And that's one thing I kind of miss, because I feel like in the 90s, like there's a lot of camp movies there. You got Wet Hot American Summer, you have this movie, you have Camp Nowhere. There's probably a couple others that I'm missing, but I never really had that sleepaway camp experience.
Hmm. Yeah.
Do you feel like you missed out on something there?
No, not at all. I enjoyed my summer.
I
played baseball like all summer long. So pretty much when I was like 8 years old. So, and then when I didn't do it, like, I enjoyed my relaxation time outside of it when I could, until, you know, baseball was just everything.
Well, I believe those places were a breeding ground for sexual exploration.
Well, yeah, I guess
a lot of kids, a lot of hormones, lack of supervision, you know, close quarters. You don't really, you know, you maybe you'll never see these people again, or you don't think about that far ahead because you're going back to your own, you know, life in a couple of weeks.
These things aren't really like a thing much anymore, are they? Like,
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm eager to find out as I'm entering the early stages of fatherhood, how much that actually goes on.
Cause I felt like it, I thought that they weren't, but I could be wrong. And I thought they weren't because of stuff along those lines.
Now, I may be talking out of turn here, but I believe sleepaway camps are very prominent within the Jewish community.
Oh, I have no clue.
I don't know what the correlation is, but I know that there's a lot of sleepaway camps where, like, Jewish people, I've heard, like, podcasts and comedians talk about that. And it's like, all of these, like, Jewish comedians are like, yeah, sleepaway. It feels like almost like a rite of passage, almost, if you're, you know, a Jewish youth.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. I've never heard that before.
So maybe that's why we're just not as, like, maybe it's like not a cultural thing, but you know what I mean? Maybe it's like, we're just not exposed to that as much.
Could be that.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? But we'll touch on the finer ideas and inner workings of Judaism a little bit later, but let's get to trending now.
Damn, son. Where'd you find this?
I didn't find this, but I know Nick saw this on Disney Plus. It's Ahsoka. Yeah. Season one, episode one and two. You got a nice double feature hitting you for the first start there. So what'd you think? What's the early returns?
The start to this was so, so good. So obviously at the center of this is Ahsoka, played by Rosario Dawson. Then we have Ray Stevenson in the mix. And
Ray Stevenson. Now, why do I know that name?
Because you know his face if you looked him up, but I know there was like a Ray Stevenson Punisher thing, but he's done other, I don't know what else he's in off the top of my head. But look him up and you'll recognize his face. Yeah. And then we have his apprentice, Ivana Sakano is the actress's name. Of course, I probably butchered her last name, but Shin Hati is her name. We have these like Sith-like characters, but they may not be Sith. We know they're not Jedi. And they come in right off the rip, and they set the tone, and they absolutely kick ass. On top of that, Rosario Dawson does some really cool shit too. And it's like, it's what I kind of had expected from her, where she said like Gandalf is an inspiration for her character for like Ahsoka at this stage. Mm-hmm. You get that vibe, you get some cool action, and there are some
Gandalf the girl. Sticks.
Yes, Gandalf the girl. And there's some pretty high stakes and all this too. And a character too, who I didn't really know much about coming in, or I didn't know at all. Morgan Elspeth is played by Deanna Lee Inosanto. And she's like her character's like a descendant from Darth Maul's world.
Okay.
So, but like the Night Sisters, like there's a pretty clear divide, at least in physical appearance, between the Night Sisters and Darth Maul's race on Dathomir. But she's from the Night Sister side, and I don't think we've seen them in live action. So it was kind of cool to get to meet her. And she's definitely someone not to be trusted. Like even for Ray Stevenson's character, Baylan Skoll, who seems to be on her side. So there's a lot of potential after the first two episodes.
All right. And this is what, an eight episode?
I believe.
Six episode?
I believe that's correct. That it's eight episodes.
And that's not a huge point there, but where does this rank right now in comparison to some of the other Disney TV shows that we've gotten recently there?
It's eight episodes, as you mentioned. And honestly, Wes, this is as promising as a start as I've experienced on any of the Disney shows. But like we say all the time, like it's just the start. Sometimes these things don't deliver.
You got to land the plane.
Yeah. And also for me, like I need to you know, if you go and have like a kick-ass end, you know, end episode that doesn't necessarily just do enough, you got to be good in the middle too. But these first two, like, absolutely what I was hoping for and more. So off to a great start.
All right. I like that. This podcast off to a great start here. Let's stay in trending now.
Damn, son. Where'd you find this?
I found this on Netflix, and this is possibly staying in the Star Wars world. Star Wars world?
Kind of.
I don't know why I just made myself say that. But a Rebel Moon trailer. That's, of course, Zack Snyder project that's going to be on Netflix right around Christmas time. I think it's December 22nd is the date I saw. Looks very much out of the world of Star Wars. I believe, if I remember correctly, this was the pitch that Zack Snyder had for his own Star Wars trilogy that Disney, Filoni, Kathleen Kennedy shot down. So he then took this idea to Netflix. They bought it up. That's why you see some of like the lightsabers and very clear allusions to Star Wars or Dune or a Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter. It's kind of like a mishmash of all of these big fantasy stories.
And I, with the lightsabers, like the very clear lightsabers, mm-hmm. I don't know. I haven't looked this up, but I feel like the term lightsaber is copywritten, you know, maybe by Lucasfilm. Or
I'm sure,
you know,
they call it something else. But yeah. I, the likeness, I was wondering the same thing, too.
Yeah, I don't know.
They may own the term, but not the likeness of it.
Yeah.
But that's a good question.
I wonder if it's like, I would think it's kind of tough to do that in some capacity where it's like, well, I mean, what am I saying? Like, you see, like, lightsaber like companies, like places that like they make lightsabers and they distribute mm-hmm. them and stuff like that, and you can buy them. I mean, as much as there is like fan art stuff that can happen, I got to imagine that you can't have legitimate businesses that go and make these things that under a different name. Like, but you still, so I would think maybe he's
yeah, and yeah, I'm sure they wouldn't have gotten to this process this without true. Either side being like, hey, what's going on here with that, right? But
yeah,
regardless of you know, the legalese terms, how litigious everyone's feeling today, the trailer does look good. This has mm-hmm. you know, a lot of benchmarks, you know, a lot of staples of Zack Snyder films there with the color palette, the slow motion features. But again, this looks like it's an interesting story. Like you said, it's on yeah. Netflix, so it's, you know, really a low barrier of entry for people. You can kind of put this on and watch it at your leisure. Friday night, kind of popcorn night with the family or by yourself. If you got a night to yourself, this seems like a good thing. Starring Sophia Boutella, who you may recognize her as the Blade Runner from Kingsman. She had the knife legs. She's got a very steely look. She's been in a few other things, too. She looks like she could hurt me and I might like it, you know, that, yep. that type of thing.
Yes.
Of course, Ray Fisher, Anthony Hopkins, Charlie Hunnam. Let me see anyone else worth mentioning here. Someone named Fra Fee, who actually looks like the love interest of Echo.
Oh, maybe. Ed Skrein's in this too. Ajax.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see if
I'm What I'm most curious to hear from you about, Wes, when it comes to Rebel Moon, we find out at the end of the trailer, I didn't know this at least, until I saw the trailer, that this is going to be split into two movies. We got a second date for it. How do you feel about that?
I think it's three movies, isn't it? The second movie is getting split into three. I thought the end trailer said there's going to be one movie in 2023.
Yep, and one in 2024.
And 2024, and then on top of the one that we're already getting.
Oh, those are the other two.
I thought so. Yeah, I thought it's going to be a three-part story.
Oh, okay. So we knew this already. All right.
Yeah,
never mind.
I think so. I think that's what it was. But I'm okay with that, you know? I'm not crazy about part one and part two, like splitting up a story. I kind of hate that. But if it's going to be a three-part story, whatever. That's fine. Overall, I don't really care.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, I think I'm here for it. But yeah, it's a lot of Star Wars news. We don't talk a whole lot of Star Wars all the time on here. But we're getting, you know, Star Wars and Star Wars adjacent stuff mm-hmm. all packed in the trending now.
Mm-hmm. It's Morphin time!
Comic book minute time. What do you got? We missed
last... Superb choice.
Huge oversight. We can go to a comic book 2 minute here if you want.
I appreciate that. I don't know how that happened on my end, but it did. You know, it's messing around with our discharge depot threw me off.
That's true. Yeah.
So for this week from Boom, we got a 30th anniversary special for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I have not got a chance to flip through this yet, but I guarantee you it's going to be better than what we got on Netflix a little while back, because that was not, you know, it's
once and always.
Yeah, not what I was hoping for. From Image, we got the Scorch issue 21. That is the Spawn team book. And then this is either the end of the arc or maybe it's the end of the story. World Tree issue 5. That's by James Tynan. This is a book that Joe called dibs on. I haven't been able to read this yet because of that. He's loving it. And this is one of the few titles where, you know, when we call dibs, usually the other person's like, you know, what is excited to read that book or hoping that they talk about it right away on the show. I have like legitimate FOMO not reading this book. It just seems like it has a ton of potential. Okay. And Joe has been loving it. From Marvel, we got the Ghost Rider Wolverine crossover continues in Wolverine 36. The next issue will be the final issue of this mini crossover. Death of the Venomverse issue 3, and then Blade issue 2. And if Death of the Venomverse is from a friend of the show, Cullen Bunn. DC, we got the Riddler year 1 issue 6. And then this week on TLDR, we're doing the September solicit. I'll be talking about some of these titles in a little bit more detail. And also, because we didn't get to we just skipped over the comic book minute last week, didn't get to mention that Mark Russell was on the show from AWA Studios a little while back, an Eisner Award-winning writer for Not All Robots from AWA Studios. He's talking about Rumpus Room with us, which Joe and I got to read the first issue of that, and it is it's, you know, where he's talking about social issues in Not All Robots, and it's about, like, you know, machines taking over and everything. This is more about, like, separation of, like, class and everything, and it's quite the interesting start.
Very cool. Very cool. So that's the comic book minute. Rumpus time is over. Nick, I would like you to wave goodbye to everybody on Twitter. Thank you, Twitter, for listening. Come check us out on YouTube. Goodbye.
I didn't know why you were doing that for a second.
No, we're all set here. And now, again, once again, we're shifting gears, but the comic book 2 minute here, we're doubling up on lost time. So thank you, Nick, for that. Once again, we're going to our main segment here, which is the heavyweights birthday rewatch in honor of my birthday that was on Sunday here. All right, Nick, why don't you give us a synopsis real quick?
This is quite the synopsis. Plump kids are lured into joining a posh fat camp with the promise of quick weight loss in good times, only to find that it is a woodland hellhole run by a psycho ex-fitness instructor.
That is very descriptive, and that gets me to go see the movie there.
Yeah, I mean, that is...
You open with plump kids? That's awesome. That's good stuff there.
It's a woodland hellhole is definitely run by a psycho ex-fitness instructor. It's definitely a way to end that pitch.
Yeah, and I think it hits, you know, describes Tony Perkis to a T there, a psycho ex-fitness instructor there.
Yes.
This film, is directed by Stephen Brill, written by Judd Apatow and Stephen Brill, starring Tom McGowan as Pat Finley. Personal friend, Pat Finley. Aaron Schwartz is Jerry Gardner, who's turned into a real hunk. He actually probably got the most out of this fat camp here because he looks like he's carved from stone right now.
Yeah, I was blown away when I saw that. I had no clue.
Of course, Ben Stiller as the aforementioned Tony Perkis. David Goldman as Nicholas, the English child, if I'm not mistaken there. Joseph Wayne Miller as Sam. Alan Covert, who you might remember from the Adam Sandler world as cameraman Kenny, Tim Blake Nelson, who played a villain in The Incredible Hulk, who looks like he's going to be reprising that role in Captain America Brave New World, plays Roger Johnson, who is the salesman of the fat camp. Sean Weiss, who you may better know as Goldberg, is played by Josh Birnbaum, plays him. Wait, no. Let's flip that in reverse.
Yeah.
Sean Weiss plays Josh Birnbaum, who you may know as Goldberg from the Mighty Ducks movies. Tom Hodges as Lars. Leah Lail, that's a name. Maybe suited for a dancer, you know?
Okay.
Is playing Julie. We have Paul Feig, who's another big name that we'll talk about a little bit later, plays Counselor Tim. And then, of course, Kenan Thompson as Roy.
As for the box office, this came out in 95, so the numbers are a little bit different here, but hauled in 17.6 with a domestic-only release with a $6 million opening weekend. I don't know the budget on this one. Received a 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb with a 29-77 split on Rotten Tomatoes.
What do the critics know?
3.2 out of 5 on Google reviews with 79% of Google users liking this movie.
Yeah, now this is a perfect segue to my score and tweet length review, because while the critics poo-poo this film here with a 29, I give it a 98 out of 100, Nick. This is a near-perfect child comedy. It's edgy, doesn't really pull many punches, and the adults can enjoy this. And, of course, Ben Stiller gives an all-time performance, which may or may not have directly inspired White Goodman and Dodgeball.
Yeah. I'm seeing, I don't know how accurate this is, but it looks like it was a $10 million.
Imagine it was that much to make.
Yeah, no way. It's, guys, after I said that, I was like, they have nothing. It's just pay for Ben Stiller. He wasn't really Ben Stiller at that point.
Yeah. No, he probably came on the cheap, you know?
Yeah. All right. So for me, when it comes to my score and tweet length review, I'm giving this a 90 out of 100.
I love it.
So entertaining, the cinematography, the editing techniques, though I must say the villain was a bit over the top.
That's the whole point.
You know what I'm going for, right?
No, I don't.
That is Tony Perkins' review when he cut the whole thing that put together.
I was wondering. I was like, wait, I thought you were doing some sort of a bit here, and
I am.
I clearly didn't catch on.
It happens. Lord knows you've done plenty of those where I didn't get it. But I also got a note that there are definitely some things in this movie, as much as I like it a lot, that do not necessarily age all that well.
Yeah, I don't think this movie gets made today. No.
I don't think
it's a damn shame that it wouldn't.
I know there's obviously a lot of weight loss stuff out there, but I don't know how many fat camps for kids. It just sounds insane to me. Like that was an actual thing.
But perhaps they need to go to a fat camp because, you know, the youth are fat. I don't know if you've been watching the news recently.
They were fat when we were kids, and I think most of us worked out okay.
Well, yeah, I'm a former fat kid myself. So hey, look at me. I'm standing here sitting proof that I don't need no fat camp. I don't need no stinking fat camp here. Okay, but let's dive right into it. Let's get into the nitty-gritty here on the exit survey question. So have you seen this movie before, and did a rewatch later in life change your perception of it?
I didn't see it when I was young. I saw this honestly for the first time a few years ago. I'd obviously heard about it. I just never had watched it. So my perception is not really going to change a whole lot. I like it. You know what I mean? And it's got that vibe from, you know, when we were kids. I feel like I never saw it, at least. I will say upon rewatch, I appreciate Ben Stiller in this movie even more. Like he does an outstanding job.
Absolutely. I mean, again, he's the standout performance of this, real memorable performance in this, among actually some pretty good child performances in here. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to like here. I saw this movie in theaters for a friend's birthday party, and then I remember, geez, in 95, I must have been 6 or 7, so I must have been in like first grade or something. And I remember that was like the show and tell, or like everyone went around the room. What'd you do this weekend? I was like, I went to Maddie Conlon's birthday, and we went to go see blah 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 heavyweight. So I have like a stark memory of that in my head. So, I loved it then. I think it's only gotten better with age. I think it's aged really well, actually. I understand what you're saying, like it doesn't get made today, but I think for the sense of humor that I have, that it just holds up.
Do you think that when you talk about like movies, and like, cause we did a Toys That Made Us episode, I think for like a Christmas episode a while back, would you say like movies that made you, would you say this is like top 10 for that kind of conversation?
Yeah. I think as a kid, for sure. I think this definitely stuck with me. And I think of, you know, this kind of comes up a little bit in most rewatchable scene. But that opening scene when Jerry's leaving school for the last day of summer, and then like him kind of going home and missing the bus and like failing to throw the baseball over the fence during the baseball game, and like the bus leaving him, and it's like all getting attacked by the dog, drinking all the like that's like, I don't know. I find that really like happy nostalgia.
Just puts you right back in a specific place and time.
Yeah, yeah. And not even like necessarily reflective of me, although I was a Husky kid as a child. I think it's just like, I remember just being happy when that movie, when I saw that scene come on, and like, oh, Heavyweights is on. I caught it at the beginning. Yes. And it's just like a feel good moment.
Yeah. This is it's just something about the tone of it and the way it's done, like the tempo and like the music in general, like that this movie gives that. If, even for somebody who did not watch it as a kid, it definitely takes me back to a like, that time. It's weird.
No, it does. I think it captures the 90s very well with the clothing, everything like that, right? So yeah, absolutely. Where does Tony Perkis rank in Ben Stiller's big screen characters?
This is a tough one.
It's an all-time villain role. He doesn't it's really good.
It is. I love, I mean, who doesn't love Dodgeball? I mean, that was like the thing for a while.
Well, this this is my thing. So I saw that you have, so you would have White Goodman number one.
It's close though. It's like 1A, 1B. Like,
can you have The Imitation ahead of the original?
I think we have a whole like branch of our show that talks about that kind of stuff.
Maybe that's an episode. I don't know. maybe we really dig a little deeper into this.
Oh yeah. Okay. That's a really good idea.
We'll file that one back there. Mm-hmm. But if you look online, it's not even just the comparisons between White Goodman and Tony Perkis, but there's actually huge Reddit threads that do the thing that we do on this show all the time, that Tony Perkis was a psycho ex-fitness instructor who took over a fat camp, lost everything, became fat, and then got ripped and bought Globo Gym and turned himself into White Goodman. That sort of thing.
That's a Multiverse of Madness kind of episode that we did once before. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So that's where I think they're both great, but it feels like they both characters are birthed from the same type of...
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna like. I know you have this ahead of that. Like, I don't blame you for that. And then Zoolander is my number three. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, but like it's like I said, I waffle back and forth on it because Tony Perkis is original, but I saw White Goodman actually first.
I can see that. Okay, all right. Yeah. No, that makes sense then. I can see that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So it's first for you.
Yes, but what do you got?
It's neurotic Ben Stiller. I think that's, you know, it's the caricature of himself that he plays so well, whether that's Something About Mary or Meet the Parents, Along Came Polly, you know, that's kind of neurotic, kind of like always there, you know, self-deprecating type of Ben Stiller. That's when I think he's at the best. And then then I really love this Tony Perkis role. That would probably be number two. Number three is a bit of a heat check, kind of a six man off the bench type performance. Hal the Nursing Orderly from Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, it's just like it's such a small thing that I.
But he's like he's coming in like a Roldis Chapman, throwing 100 every time, and then beating people up while he's at it. You know?
That's why I didn't include it on the list. But yeah, it's like it's fair. It's very fair. And
I will put you to sleep.
Yeah, and I personally like prefer those over neurotic Ben Stiller. I think he's like. Neurotic Ben Stiller is like almost. It's not bad. It just doesn't do the same thing for me. I guess.
I see. I get you there. I think that's where he really cut his teeth. You know, that kind of really, really made his bread and butter there.
Yeah.
Derek Zoolander would be after that, and then I just have White Goodman last, almost for the exact opposite reason that you have him first. I saw Dodgeball first. No, I really liked the movie and liked the movie upon watching it for the first time. All that went through my mind was like, this is Tony Perkis.
Yep.
You know, and I'm like, all right, he's just recycling this role here. But
yep.
But yes, but it's still really good. It's a really funny character. Nobody makes me bleed my own blood.
Yeah. Yes.
My fitness consigliere, Michelle.
Yes.
Yes.
Blazer. Yeah. Blazer.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, he's got a lot of memorable lines. This is all, you know, all kind of like tier one. Hmm. Tier three might be his performance in The Cable Guy with Jim Carrey. So, not crazy about that one. But aside from Ben Stiller, who went on to have the best career after this film, in your opinion?
So I am curious. There's one person you brought up earlier, that Paul Feige or Feige, that has like had a good career. Like, you're gonna need to enlighten me a little bit. But for me,
it comes
down to Apatow and Keenan. And I think it's got to go to Apatow just because of all the different movies that he made. He had a real nice run for a while. So
it's definitely Apatow. And he kind of had the whole, again, revival of the R-rated comedy movie there, right? So he's kind of got that under his belt there. But Paul Feig is a pretty famous director there. So he created Freaks and Geeks. He directed Bridesmaids, The Heat, The Spy. So he's worked with Melissa McCarthy a bunch.
Okay.
A Simple Favor, which was what's her name? Blake Lively movie that was, I think Ana de Armas was also in it. But anyway, that was kind of like a thriller mystery movie. He's done a whole bunch of episodes on The Office. He did the reboot of, I think the female reboot of Ghostbusters. So he's done a whole lot of stuff. He's got a lot of producing credits under his name, or writing credits, kind of behind the scenes.
Got it. Okay. Understood.
Did 12 episodes of Nurse Jackie, 26 episodes of The Office. So yeah, he's got a lot under his belt. Trying to think of anything else here that would be popping up.
You know what? I'll tell you what. They had it's great career. Obviously, Apatow, same thing, and then Kenan Thompson. But I would think that Tom McGowan has to have had the best career since Heavyweights because of his interaction at Hofstra with a fellow alum.
Yeah, Tom McGowan, close personal friend, Hofstra alum here. Little story. I might have mentioned this on the podcast. He's actually had a pretty good career as like a working actor. Who's like, you know, if you want to stay at that level of like not being uber famous and just like make a living as an actor, I think he would qualify as a success. But anyway, he's been in Sleepless in Seattle. He's been in Frasier. He's been on Everyone Loves Raymond. He's been on a whole bunch of stuff there. Modern Family a couple times. So anyway, but back to my run-in with one Fat Pat Finley there. I was supposed to, for a media class, to go see Phil Rosenthal speak. That was an assignment that we had. He was the creator of Everyone Loves Raymond, also a Hofstra alum. We go into this event space. There's maybe like 75 people there, maybe like less than 100. And sitting in the front row is Tom McGowan, aka Pat Finley. And the whole time, we couldn't even pay attention because my friends and I were just geeking out. It's like, oh my God, that's you know, Fat Pat from Heavyweights there. That's the counselor. And then Phil stops his speech. It ends. Everyone comes up to talk to him. And Tom McGowan is just kind of standing over in the corner there. And like me and my three buddies, we go up to him. We're like, oh my God, you're in Heavyweights. Like, this is awesome. We talked to him about for like 5 minutes. And he was really blown away that we wanted to talk to him. But the funny story that he kind of left us with was that he still, you know, would still keep in touch with Ben Stiller. And when he would be like waiting in, I don't know, like a Hollywood executive's office or something like that, you know, in a waiting room there, Ben Stiller would happen to come in, he would sneak up behind him and then go right back into the Tony Perkis voice and go, Finley, and like freak him out a little bit, you know? So I found that very humorous. I thought that was a nice little anecdote there.
But yeah.
Tom McGowan, close personal friend.
And yeah, look at that.
A pretty good working actor.
Nice. Yeah, that's funny. Finley.
The other one, this is definitely not, you know, this is an honorable mention. It's Tim Blake Nelson. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? You know, of course he was. Is it the Brainiac in the Incredible Hulk? Is that the?
I don't know what the character's name is.
But he's the bad guy in that, and he's been in a bunch of other stuff. He was in six episodes, you know, and Watchmen, the HBO miniseries.
He's in Holes.
Yeah, he was in Holes. Yeah, you'd recognize his face. He's kind of that guy. He was in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. A couple other things as well. So he's gone on to do some good things, and you're going to see him again in the MCU fairly soon.
Samuel Stearns. That's what it was.
There we go. And then, yeah, we got Jeffrey Tambor. You know, he's another guy who's been in a whole bunch of stuff, but he kind of got nixed out of there in the Me Too movement.
Oh, okay. Jeffrey, that's why that name rings a bell, probably.
He's the father in Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's not why the name brings up. I did not know that about him. Okay.
Yeah. What was the most rewatchable scene from this movie?
The scene that I was quoting earlier. It's like may or may not be the Miss's favorite scene from that movie, but it's honestly it's outstanding, where he just comes back in like out of nowhere, like a spider monkey up on the friggin'
He's like a gargoyle just like hanging up there.
Insane. Yeah, he's that was nuts.
Breaking the glass, right? He's like drinking the water and breaking the glasses left and right, walking on it.
Yeah. The other one too was like when they're doing the yoga after the hike. There's just something about him.
The monkey.
Yeah, yeah. There's something about him there where it's just like, this is peak insanity for this guy.
You're all Icarus.
Yeah. Get on the scale.
Yeah.
I love that. That's right. That is the thing I think of most when it comes to when heavyweights comes up. It is get on the scale. Get off the scale.
All right, get off the scale. Yeah. And they cut the camera and he like loses it for a second. And then he's like, all right, let's get back to it. And he's like in all like a cheerful, happy voice. That's all great stuff. I think the first one that comes to mind, aside from the opening scene, which I mentioned a little bit earlier, unpacking all the candy in the chipmunk bunkhouse when they're unloading that the whole time. I think that's pretty cool. The grossest scene is when they all wipe the melted chocolate that was on Nicholas's belly. And they all just completely wipe it. And I think it's Aberman from the Mighty Ducks actually. He says, this is completely unsanitary. And then licks his hands. They all have, you know, you get that scene a little bit later where Tony raids the chipmunk bunkhouse there. And he's like, oh, look, a deli meat. Like, that's something I would say all the time, you know, hungover going to get egg sandwiches and stuff at the local deli, like in college. Like, oh, look, a deli meat. Great stuff there. Jerry's letter narration to his grandma with Tony falling into the slow descent of his craziness. So that's when they kill the blob and they break down all the go-karts. And then I believe it cuts to Tony over the PA system saying lunch has been canceled due to a lack of hustle. Deal with it.
That's right.
So that's all good stuff there. Then, of course, the big crescendo, the Apache relay race with Camp MVP. As a kid, I loved that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the
that was very exciting to me. The go-karts and the Hall of History and all that stuff.
The go-karts were cool, and there were definitely a few moments where I'm looking at it, and I'm like, that's definitely not the kid driving. I mean, obviously. Like, Like, I didn't realize it the first time around, because I'm watching it differently.
Yeah, and this is something that will age the best, I think, is Goldberg just knowing how to shave. And he's like the perfect shaver. And he's just,
that's awesome.
And he's shaving like with a straight razor on a balloon.
Yep.
Like, I thought that was really awesome. Funny.
Yeah.
And then the dance. I thought the dance was a really fun scene, too.
Holy crap. So I'm trying to figure out, because when you said that, the redhead kid in Heavyweights is from Mighty Ducks. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I didn't think so. And it doesn't look like that's the case. But as I'm trying to find that other kid from Heavyweights, I'm seeing David Bowie is listed as being in this, or
David Bowie. Yes.
And Lauren was thrown off when she saw the name last night. And I was like, hey, I don't know what that's about. And then I didn't know. It's the guy that's the guy who runs Camp MVP. His name is David Bowie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I thought I almost got tripped up on that as well. I almost just threw David Bowie in there playing Camp Chris or Counselor Chris or whoever he was.
I didn't realize that. He sucks, though. He's a good actor, but every time I see him on screen, I'm like, God, this guy again.
Oh, yeah. They play the douchey Sporto very well throughout that whole thing.
Well,
yeah.
I mean him in general. Anytime I see him in something, I'm like, oh, this freaking guy.
Right. Not exactly what you think of David Bowie.
No, not at all. He's running the MVP, Camp MVP. Like, to me, that I guess you could make the case like there's probably people at Camp MVP are probably people who want to be MVPs, so they're working at that camp, so they have power over those kids, or they're actually people who were MVPs.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I would tend to go with the former than the latter.
And that's what he is.
On that one there, yeah. But I do love the dance scene. I think that's great. You have Counselor Tim there just butting into every conversation like, this bites. This bites. This bites. And then they all end up dancing. And then you have like Sam, who I think plays not Uncle Fester, but he was in the reboot of the Addams Family movies. He ends up making out with like the hottest girl there, and it's like, oh, that's fun. So they all kind of get theirs at their end. So that's good stuff. What will age the best from this movie?
I mean, the thing that has aged the best is Ben Stiller's performance.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, for all the, like, he does obviously a lot of, like, shitty stuff in this movie, but he's the villain. Like, it's like, it seems very much like this character could exist still today. Maybe some slight changes would have happened because of just the times, but very much like you could go and have Tony Perkis, like, you could run into that now in a similar type of setting.
Oh yeah, you'd probably find him somewhere in like the how do I want to say, like, new age fitness bro space, you know, like on the internet, like Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. Yeah. He's somewhere out there, you know.
Yeah,
like probably in like the same world as like the Liver King.
Yeah, probably. But probably. But to like with all that, like again, we're talking about the rankings for his performance. Like, this is very early on in his like movie career for him. This has held up as well as it has. Probably had to be maddening for him in some ways, where it's like he was probably always trying to chase that. But at the same time, it's still like we're talking about this performance in a like a like what age? Well, it's this performance 1,000%.
And also, this he comes up a little bit later, but playing Papa Perkis at the end,
yeah,
he does that very well, and that's and he ends up lifting that role to kind of extrapolate into his Starsky and Hutch performance when they go undercover, when he's like, do it. Bacardi and Cola, do it. Like, that's kind of the same thing. He kind of has a similar type of voice there, which I think he's just making fun of his father, Jerry Stiller. I feel like he's like, you know, kind of incorporated that a lot. Mm-hmm. But that's been really good. We mentioned Goldberg shaving. I thought that was really funny. Everything, capturing everything it's like to be a fat kid in the 90s. Again, kind of alluding to that opening scene where he's leaving school and he's like kind of the losery kid. They got those like cool graphic sports t-shirts with like the Islanders on there that gets referenced in a little bit, you know, or early on in the movie, I should say. So I don't know. I think it just captures that 90s like baggy clothes and like suburbia really well.
Hmm. Yeah, no, it's definitely that. I mean, like for as much as like the actually I'm going to pivot us into what weighs the worst, because this kind of leads into that. As much as the parents, like Jerry's parents specifically, are like, what are you doing? They very much feel like real for that era. That said, these parents age terribly. I don't think from like now, like, I mean, you're sure you have parents like that now, but like, you're just going to send your kid away to a weight loss camp and like make them feel like shit about it and everything. Like, I thought it was terrible.
Yeah, so it feels like, and I might be wrong here, but, you know, every generation tries to do what their parents didn't do, right, previously. So, like, you know, say Jeffrey Tambor's generation, that their parents' generation probably didn't have anything, right? They probably grew up dirt poor. So now they're living in this great house in a place that we'll discuss in a little bit in Unanswerable Questions. And they give them everything, but they're working so much that they don't have the time there. So on their downtime, they want to send, you know, pay the money, just throw the money at the problem to fix the kid's weight problems, while they can also get a vacation from the kid. Mm-hmm. Now, this generation, like our generation, is like, no, we're going to like helicopter parent our kids, you know, and be like really overlook every, you know, really kind of be on top of everything, like maybe almost to like a negative degree.
Mm. Yeah, there's no.
So that's my thought, my analysis there.
There's definitely plenty of that. Yeah, I mean that line of logic does make sense. And then the other thing too is Goldberg's career. Obviously, like that's low hanging.
But he's on the up and up though. He's been on the straight and narrow. So you know, his acting career has definitely gone downhill.
But. Well, yeah, but that's and I mean like yeah, when I say his career, obviously you first go to like those shots we saw of him a few years ago, like just where he didn't look good. But yeah. It's like he
meth, was, I think, was the drug of choice there.
He was like really, really funny. I don't know what else he was in besides Mighty Ducks and this, but like he's very funny. Like I he'd be very funny now. What I don't know. What happened?
I thought Josh was the coolest guy ever. I thought like the character in this movie, he was just so cool and sure of himself. And he's like, you know, I didn't realize I was talking to a man, Uncle Tony. You know, like he has all these like perfect comebacks. He's like never intimidated by adults. Like he's like kind of an adult himself, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought that was very cool.
Maybe that's why he ran into problems, but it's just like, it just sucks that like, you know, he's
Well, that's what happens with a lot of these child actors. You know, they get they get too famous too early there. And of course, like the Mighty Ducks. I mean, Goldberg was huge, right? I mean, that he was one of the more popular players there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. We kind of touched on this. Do they still have fat camps, you think?
I hope not. I don't think so.
I'm sure there's like not, you know, obviously no, it's not called fat camp, but I'm sure it's a way to be like feel comfortable in your own skin or something kind of like foofy like that instead of like, hey, we're here to lose weight. They're like, we're here to find body positivity.
Maybe.
And if we happen to find good health goals along the way, then that's just an added bonus.
That may be it.
I think in that type of space there, you know,
it still feels weird.
Because there's not even really like military camps. Like you remember like reform school and things like that? Like,
yeah, there's all that stuff. Yeah.
So I'm not even sure if those are a real thing. We touched on this as well. The fat community would never let this movie get made in our days. Although I think if with all of these reboots that Disney's doing, I think, you know, just based on the general population, we might need a heavyweights movie.
That would be that they would do that. That would be terrible. They would try and modernize it and it wouldn't work.
They would ruin it. Yeah, because people aren't funny nowadays. You know, that's very few people are funny nowadays. You know, I agree. They wouldn't know how to handle this with a sense of humor. This would be like, what's the show? Not This Is Us. It was the ABC show. It's like, This Is Life.
I don't know.
Mandy Moore was on it.
Oh, I have no clue then.
Oh, I'm blanking, but it was like a show that was very serious. It was almost like a nighttime soap opera that it was so ridiculous. That's what I would see happening if they redid this movie. What did not age well? Tim's outfit choice of cutoff jeans and a crop top Panthers practice jersey. Just stuck out to me like there. Like if he was trying to send a message, I think he was sending the wrong message. You know what I mean?
It was odd. It was odd.
Absolutely. And of course, Jeffrey Tambor, he got me too there. So that didn't end very well. Unanswerable questions. Now, this is a fun one here. I think I know the answer for this. I saw this in a synopsis, but I wasn't 100% sure. Where do you think Jerry lives?
Long Island.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought as well. Just from the Long Island jersey, right?
Right.
The t-shirt that they're wearing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then his affluent parents, I know not all of Long Island is like affluent necessarily.
But that's, it's a good call there. Yeah.
So most of it is, I thought, but yeah. Yeah.
Where do you think the camp is?
That's another thing about this where we talk, like, I think, and I haven't articulated that. It's one thing to send kids away to camp. It's like, hey, they're camp, but like they're, you know, maybe 30 minutes away, but really, you know, 20, whatever. They're flying their kids across the country and they're like, just like, they're like 12 years old at most.
Eighth grade, ninth grade. Yeah. Right.
Maybe a few of them are freshmen, maybe, but even then, I don't know.
Well, this is pre 9/11 world that we're dealing in here. So, you know, it's a lot safer mentality, you know, or maybe another way to look at it is a more naive approach to it. You know,
that's a fair point. That could be it.
What I did think was interesting, though, where the pre 9/11 thing comes up is like all of these kids who are sneaking pepperoni rolls like in their back and like filing down, you know, like when they're unloading in the chipmunk bunk, like there's no TSA there. Like they're just riding on the plane with all of that stuff. Like, that could be considered weapons, maybe, you know.
That's interesting. Yeah. Huh. I didn't think of that.
Okay. Yes. So I thought that was funny. But the camp, where the camp is, so they're flying from Long Island. I always thought of it as like upstate New York, but there's a line that obviously they wouldn't be flying up to Syracuse if they're from Long Island. Like, I don't think that would happen. So there's a line that Tony says he's like, if you're from the central Pennsylvania area, you'll know that the Perkis lighting system lights up half, you know, has been donated all in here, something like that. So then I'm thinking like, all right, so maybe Western Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, Ohio, Indiana, like somewhere in like middle America.
Maybe that would make sense. Actually, it's a good point about the lighting. Yeah. Cause as much as his dad's got a ton of money, he's probably not trying to go all over. And also to that end, when at the end of the movie where we see Papa Perkis, like he got there pretty quickly. It seems like that whole thing happened in the course of the day. So
right.
Probably He's probably in Pennsylvania.
It's got to be nearby. Yeah. That feels right. Maybe the greater Pittsburgh area.
Look at that.
All right. That's good. There's some good internet sleuthing. Again, this is a multiverse madness type questioning here. Is this a look at the Mighty Ducks Duck Squad after the Junior Goodwill Games, but before they go to prep school?
I was trying to find one like that would bring in like Emilio Estevez for this.
Because Jerry was in the first one.
Jerry
Gardner.
Oh,
he was in the first Mighty Ducks.
Oh, okay.
And then again, maybe I was wrong on that, but I thought the Abraham kid was also in this movie too.
Wait, which one's? Why am I drawing a blank on which one's Jerry Gardner?
Jerry's the main character.
Oh, the kid.
Yeah.
Jeez, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Jerry Gardner, 141 pounds. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. He was in the first one. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That would. Yeah. Then I couldn't think of a joke like for this for an unanswerable question thing. But yeah, maybe you're right, Wes. I don't know.
There we go. I think that could be there. What was I going to say? Oh, you go. Let me see if I can remember this here.
Okay, so I really only had one because, again, as you all witnessed, I epically failed at trying to make a Mighty Ducks joke with this. what the hell was wrong with people in the 90s? They thought all of these kids were overweight. I'm not saying that some of these kids weren't overweight, some bigger than others, but, like, Keenan is not big in this movie. Like, I'm not talking about his height. He's not a big kid.
He wears it well there, for sure.
He's not.
He's got a little chubby. He probably wouldn't need to go to fat camp. But,
that's
you know,
what I mean.
I would say I wasn't necessarily fat, but excuse me, I was skinny fat, which some may say is the worst place to be. It's like purgatory because you're skinny, but you're fat in all the bad places.
From a looks standpoint, I get that. I get what you mean there because like I definitely had that too. But I'm not talking like. I mean, like from sending their kids to a camp. And I mean, like Keenan at most in this movie is husky. Nicholas is like a little chubby kid. Doesn't need to like not dealing with like severe issues. Some of these kids are like are very big. But some of them are just like normal big. And some of them aren't even that big.
Yeah, I agree. But when unchecked, we saw what Keenan Thompson turned into. So,
well,
still maybe they're just projecting.
He's still healthy and everything, but
I would say in the case of Keenan Thompson and a few others, some people wear their weight well. So they're just like barrel chested or just like a large guy, but solid, you know, like the slovenly fat people is what I think the concern should be.
So are you telling me that to go back to the Keenan thing is that we have like Billy Bean sitting there with the people saying like this kid. Someday he's going to be real big. Like it's going to happen.
Baseball. His name is Keenan Thompson. Baseball hates him, but he's going to be the key to our. Yeah. What's that whole thing that Jonah Hill says? That
it's not Kevin Euclid. Is it Kevin Euclid?
Scott Hatterberg.
Is it Hatterberg? No, Hatterberg's one of the guys. But is it Euclid because of the walks?
Oh right, yeah.
Yeah, Greek god of walks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like
yeah,
I actually hate that. I that movie's very well done, but I hate so much of that whole thing that I like. It's in some ways I love that movie, in some ways I freaking hate it.
I hear you're a baseball purist at the end of the day here. You know, big unwritten rules guy.
I don't care about stats. I have to use stats all the time. I just want everybody to know in case they forget or don't like care about baseball and just watch the movie. They talk about how they were like this poverty-stricken franchise, which the A's are now, and they didn't have a ton of money back then. But for all the offensive issues they had, they did have Miguel Tejada. And, on top of that, you had Barry Zito, Mark Mulder, and Tim Hudson in your rotation. So shut up about all this nonsense like, oh, we had to scratch and claw. No, you just don't have money to go get hitters, but you had a good team still in a terrible division at the time.
Hey, I hear you. I love they couldn't even get out of the ALDS, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because was it the Red Sox that would kick their ass all the time?
Yeah, it was the Red Sox. And then maybe the Yankees, too.
Yeah.
Got them 1 year.
Yeah, I think. Oh, you know what? The one I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of the Angels. The Red Sox would kick their ass, and then they would do well against the Yankees. And then the Twins, the Yankees just
dominated. But there was a couple years where the Red Sox were down like 2-0 against the A's and then won 3-2. You know, come back like that.
This is where we, like I always say, like Moneyball works to a point, And that's like when you don't have those big guys at the end. Johnny Damon can't be as much as he was that guy for the Red Sox. I don't know. But anyways, I digress.
No, I hear you. We can go into Jason Giambi, Eric Chavez, Jermaine Dye, you know, all that stuff.
Yep. Right? Eric Chavez. Oh, my God. Stole a gold glove from Mike Lowell.
Jason Kendall. You know, we can go down the list there. But he got traded too there. Yeah, that's a good immaculate cricket. Traded from Pittsburgh to Oakland. Unanswerable question that I had there. Why was Tony Perkins so upset with Jerry? Like, he was obsessed with Jerry. I know that he's the main character, so like you have to have that through line and that connection there. But he really wasn't the problem there. He was like weirdly obsessed with him. Like you mentioned, the Jerry Gardner, 180 pounds. Like it really should have been Josh or Roy. Like those are the ones who were the real, real problem kids.
Yeah, they're just trying to force the issue of who's the main character. And
I know, but
you're right. That's fair. Although he was kind of, you know, what's weird is, Jerry like emerged as a leader for obvious reasons where he like, you know, goes and helps out.
He's the captain.
Yeah, but that as well. But like Josh is still kind of the leader. Like if he told everybody like, hey, let's give Tony a chance, like in reality, they'd give him a chance in reality.
Absolutely. I mean, he's the one who gives Jerry the captain nickname. So and everyone just kind of falls in line right there. They all pick up on it. So including I'm with you that. On that.
Yeah,
exactly. Who had the best performance by a side character?
I think it's going to be Papa Perkins.
It's a real heat check of a performance there, you know, because it comes in really quick and you're like, wait, is that Ben Stiller? You know?
Yep. He's honestly, I don't think Lauren knew that was Ben Stiller till this time we rewatched it.
Oh yeah, yeah. So it's good then.
Yeah.
I'm glad she liked that too.
That end too, I caught this and I had to rewind and show her. So again, like it's different era, different. Like you don't have CGI like back then, and obviously you wouldn't even for this movie anyways. But they would have done probably a better job back in time of when you have Ben Stiller there playing his dad. You have Ben Stiller also being taken out in like cuffs or whatever. The one time where those two characters were on screen,
right?
If you look and focus, you'll see very clearly not Ben Stiller, obviously, but like you shouldn't be able to tell.
They probably have enough hair prosthetics on him that he covers up there. I feel like he had the big mutton chops there. Am I wrong? And like the glasses and everything.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'm sorry. I'm not talking about Papa Perkins. I'm saying when Papa Perkins is on screen. I didn't explain that well.
Oh, I see. Tony was someone else. I got
Tony
you.
Is is not Ben Stiller. So, and it's like if you in like watching it at full speed, you know, especially first time, you're not going to notice it because you're just like, oh my God, Ben Stiller's on screen,
right?
But when you go and if you go back and look for it, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay, I like that. I like that. There, Papa Perkins is really good. I really like Nicholas, the future president of the United States, even though he's from England.
Yep.
So he had a good stuff. Lars had a lot of great performances there with the body system. Body. That's great. You know, he's like, I'm really feeling the Perkinsizing Tony when they're doing on the glide machines, you know, like, I think that's all great. Him dancing at the dance. I thought that was ridiculous, but awesome. So he has a lot of really goofy moments. He really chews it up there. We mentioned Josh. Josh is, I mean, I was, like I said, I thought he was the coolest kid. He was pretty much the Tommy Pickles of the group there, I think.
Yeah, and in reality, actually, because again, I'm not thinking about just because he's prominent, I fall prey to this sometimes. But yeah, if he's in that conversation, Josh is absolutely the best side character, no question.
Tim, Counselor Tim, I thought was really good. He had some nice moments, again, at the dance, this bites, and then hopping in and dancing at the end to kind of get everything started. When they're unpacking everything from the bus, and they're making fun of him for losing all that weight, and he's just, like, shaking his butt. And then he's like, oh, yep, you see that bald eagle there when the nurse walks by? You know, very good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
John, and I forgot this, too. Another thing I say all the time. Is when Roy tells Josh that there's a new nurse and that she's very attractive, and he goes, "This pleases me." I say that all the time. This pleases me. he's a boss.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he was shaving in that scene, actually.
that would be the one. That might have been the one where he was doing it. Yeah, yeah. Josh has to be the winner here.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. But Papa Perkins, you know, Ben Stiller, he's getting enough awards here.
Yeah, now. At least a great bit role. We'll give him that.
Who lost the movie, Nick?
Camp MVP. I mean, pretty obvious.
Very clearly, very clearly. I think it's the kids and or the parents because they didn't really lose any weight. Jeffrey Tambor's character, he makes mention of that. He's like, you didn't really look like you lost weight, but you're happy. Okay, that's great. So big waste of money there, you know, at the end of the day. Lars was a big loser. He got tied up and assaulted by a deer.
Yep.
Yeah. The Bushkin family, you know, they just went bankrupt. And then they get caught up in all of this stuff too, you know. So it's tough.
Yeah, for me the other one was the parents, just to go back to that. But Lars is actually a really funny one too, because it's like that I forgot, because again, I think this might be the only second time, maybe the third time I've seen this. When Lars was screaming, I totally forgot it was a deer. And I saw that, I was like, holy shit, this guy.
Now I didn't write his name down on here, but the former kid, the former camp goer who turned into the counselor, who then turned as like a he had kind of like a crew top, like Howie Long type haircut. Do you know what I'm talking about? He was like,
he's also in Rookie of the Year, the blonde kid.
He is a big loser in this too, because he's such a turncoat, you know, real Benedict Arnold.
Yes, he is. Yes, yeah, that's a fair way to put it. Never mind. I'm good.
You're sure?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, gotcha. Who won the movie?
Ben Stiller. It's got to be, right? I mean, it's an outstanding performance, all-time performance for him. And, I mean, yeah. There's one other candidate, I think, that you have in play that I would be willing to call that the winner.
From a story standpoint, it's Pat Finley. Because he becomes the leader of the finally goes into a more responsible role of kind of becoming the camp director and taking everything on. He finally gets over his pussiness and he says he's crazy about his gal and kisses the nurse, Julie there. So he kind of grows a pair, kind of grows up a little bit. So the big winner on that. But the only one that I think really rivals Ben Stiller in like the greater scheme of things is Judd Apatow. Because if this was his first role, and that really launched him into, you know, Freaks and Geeks, into 40-Year-Old Virgin, into everything else with Seth Rogen and all that, right? The frat pack, I think they're all called. So all that stuff. I mean, he's made a pretty big mark on comedy movies there.
Yes, yeah, he definitely has. I didn't know, because the frat packs is like when we were looking at stuff after the movie. Like, I didn't. Maybe it's just me being stupid. I didn't know Ben Stiller was in it, or at least I didn't know he was.
He was in the universe, right? Was he in the center of it? I thought it was mostly Vince Vaughn, the Wilson brothers,
and Will Ferrell.
And Will Ferrell.
That's what I thought too. But she, when we looked it up, like it seems that it's not the case, like from the past. But I don't know. Maybe, but this is like there's like 40, like according to what I think it was on Wikipedia, it was like 40 something movies. From the like part of, as part of like the frat pack, so I don't know.
Does that even go into like Seth, not Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill and like Danny McBride and like James Franco? And
I don't think it does. I think it was Apatow, Paul Rudd was in it, Ben Stiller, the guys we just mentioned, Steve Carell. But I was like, some of these people, I thought it was just Vince Vaughn and the grouping that you said. So I was a little.
Oh yeah, Wikipedia says the group is usually considered to include Stiller, the Wilsons, Ferrell, Steve Carell, and Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That one kind of threw me. So,
but there was an earlier coin term, the frat pack, to describe 1990s actors: Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and Edward Norton, who had all acted together in dramas.
Interesting. Okay. On all this too, we lightly talked about the cameraman. I was when I saw him in this, I was like, "Oh yeah, there he is." And I was like, "Wait a second, no, he's not a Ben Stiller guy. He's a Sandler guy."
This is probably before he latched on.
Probably.
He was probably trying to latch on to Ben Stiller, and he was like, Ben was like, "No," and just kind of curved him real quick.
Well,
very interesting stuff. So, I give this movie a 98. You give this movie a 90. This is the furthest. We're going to have to do the quick math here. That seems like a 94 CMM aggregate score there. 94 on Heavyweights, the 1995 movie. Go check it out. It's on Disney+. It's a good time. I'm back. You know One note, though, about the Disney Plus thing. It was under, I don't know if you noticed this, it was under the Disney Channel original movies.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was or was not one. I didn't, yeah. I was thrown by that, too.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. But let's switch gears now.
It's morphin' time!
Oh, God, where is it? Where is it? Where, oh, it's all down here.
Choo-choo, bitches.
All right, Nick, you got Holy Matrimony coming up this weekend here.
I do, yes. As you can tell, I'm like starting to feel it. I'm ready for it. I'm excited for it, but like it's Monday. I'm ready for it to be, you know, Thursday, Friday. Like, let's get this going, please.
So are you working Friday?
Nope.
No. Oh, nice. So Thursday's your last day before the wedding?
Nope, Wednesday.
Even better.
Yeah, oh, I'm driving down to, we have to drive down, as you know. Mm-hmm, and then mm-hmm. we have like a details meeting like with our planner and stuff, so we gotta, I'd rather just have the extra day to just do stuff and leave a lot of room for error on my end, because Lord knows I need it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it'll be fun. You'll do great. You have your vows written?
No, it's like the standard like Catholic wedding stuff.
Do you even have the choice with that when you meet with the priest?
I don't think we have that option that you're talking about, but there are two choices. I just don't know like what the other one is. Like, we went with the standard, like, I know we're repeating. Like, that's
okay.
Like, the normal thing.
Even then, it's just a call and repeat there. So it's like, you're not exactly. like you have to remember, right?
Yeah. No, exactly.
Be
no.
familiar with it, though. Be familiar with it. That's nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's very fun stuff. I can't wait to see you in person this week and see you up there. I hope I'm going to keep a couple onions in my pocket in case I have to produce some tears on demand. Just prepare myself for that moment. I think I'm really excited for it. So I can't wait to see you guys and see everyone up there and see you enter manhood here.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Very excited to see. I'm so excited to see everybody. Like, it's, I'm excited. That's why I'm like I'm exhausted in a way, but I'm also like just so ready to go. Like, I'm ready to have a blast.
It'll be good stuff here. And I just got a new battery put in my car. So that was nice. That'll be great. So that'll be good stuff there. I'm ready there for that.
Go. Good. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Jeez.
Yeah, I'm driving down and driving back. So nice 2.5 hour commute up and back there.
You're driving back.
Yeah. It's just going to work out the best because Jules has to leave for her sister's wedding at like 9 a.m. the next day.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a little bit of baby duty before the two of us have to go down there for photos with everyone. Then I have to hand the baby off to my stepmom, who's going to be watching her, who is also delivering the cake. So it's like a whole kind of handoff situation there. But yeah,
I appreciate
it's going to be a long 48 hours.
I was going to say, I knew you had a lot, but I appreciate you. Coming down.
Yeah, no. So yeah. Oh yeah. I wouldn't miss it for the world, man. This is great stuff.
I appreciate it. Yeah. We
just need content, you know, so we need something to talk about when you come back. So
exactly. Yes. So yeah, we should probably give the people the heads up that what the plan is for next week, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So next week we'll be doing the wedding episode, right? The top weddings in movies, right? So we have that in the can, as they say. That's a bit of podcast jargon there. You don't have to worry yourself with that. And then the following weeks, a little bit TBD. So the next 2 weeks after that, it might be a re-release. I might bring in a special member from the DSG here.
Nice.
We'll see. We'll kind of play with it and see how it goes there. But we definitely have one episode for next week. And it's going to be the top weddings and movies at the same bad time, at the same bad place. Just a little bit of restructuring there. You won't have your trending nows, your discharge depots, your comic book minutes. They're not all the bells and whistles, but just a boilerplate episode.